Welcome to our Hilary Term Morning of Theoretical Physics. This one is a bit special because rather than focusing on a subject, we're focusing on some wonderful young scientists that we have in the department. Shivaji Sundi joined us from Princeton as the eighth Wickham professor, the next Wickham professor, and he was able to bring funding which has enabled us to appoint Wickham Pious Fellows, which we were able to advertise across the whole of theoretical physics. And we've been lucky enough to end up with George and Francesco and Andy, who are going to talk to you today. And so it's going to be a whistle-stop tour through modern theoretical physics. News from the department. We have appointed a new faculty member, Dr. Edward Hardy, who did his DPhil with John Wheater and is currently at Liverpool, will be joining us in September. Ed is an astroparticle physicist, and so he's going to be working on things like sort of CERN in the sky, looking at all the new astrophysical experiments, which are going to give us information about particle physics, and also CERN in the basement, the Beecroft, where quantum detectors are pushing the boundaries to when they can look at single elementary particles. So that's going to be exciting, new frontier in astroparticle physics. Other things to say, if anybody wants something to do this afternoon, Torpids is going on at the moment, so if you want to wander down to the river, people are rowing up and down the river. And indeed, we've also done the same thing for the next morning of theoretical physics, will be the end of fifth week, which is the 27th of May, and that will be on fusion. So you can learn about the new advances in fusion, in particular the net energy gain that was much advertised a few months ago, and that will be led by Michael Bonds, along with Georgia Acton and Archie Bott, and they'll be telling you about the theory behind fusion. And that coincides with 8 weeks, so if you want to make a weekend of it, anybody who likes rowing here in the morning and down at the river in the afternoon. And by then the weather might be a bit better. Anyway, this morning we're going to start with George, Dr. George Obiet, who did his PhD at Harvard and is a particle physicist. And George is going to tell us about cosmic inflation and the very early universe.
Okay, thank you, Julia. Is this mic working better now, or do I have to shout louder?
Actually, the mic is working.
Oh, it's not. Okay, so I'll try to shout. I'm not usually very loud, but I'll try my best. Okay, so thank you, Julia, for the introduction, and thank you all for coming. Good morning to you all. So today, as advertised, I'll be talking about inflation, and there has been a lot of talk about inflation lately, and we're going to talk just about that. And by that, of course, I mean cosmic inflation. And yeah. All right, so let me start by giving some motivation of why we study inflation and an overview of where this talk is going. So everything I say in the next few slides will be covered again in more detail throughout the talk. But this overview is meant to be as a roadmap so that you can follow the flow of logic easily through the presentation. All right, so inflation is a period of accelerated expansion in the very early universe. And the reason we're interested in inflation is because it can explain some puzzles in data. I will tell you what puzzles later on. We'll look at one puzzle in particular, and we'll make it very precise and why it's so puzzling. And so this here, what I'm showing is a cartoon of the universe. And time runs from left to right. So this is the universe today, and this is the very early universe. And as we go back, the universe was hotter and denser and smaller. And also, as we go back, the universe behind before about 380,000 years in age, it was opaque. So light in this universe could not travel that far. Okay, at 380,000 years, the universe became transparent. And from then onwards, we could do cosmology. So we could look very far at galaxies, and we can see things, you know, back in the history of the universe. So the farther away we look, the farther back in time we see. But of course, we cannot see back in time farther than this surface, because light doesn't go behind here. Okay? So this surface here is called the surface of last scattering, and the light that we get from this surface is called the cosmic microwave background, or CMB for short. Okay, so this is the light that we can receive. This is the farthest light we can receive today. And we live here, and so light goes here, and we catch that light. And we're going to see that a puzzle on this surface actually teaches us about something really, really early that happened in the early universe, which is inflation. So in this talk, I'll be talking about the accelerated expansion that happens here. The universe is also accelerating today, but this is not relevant for the talk today. So there's an accelerated phase here, and we believe also an accelerated phase here. What I'm talking about is the very early part, not today. Okay? So we can collect light that comes from the CMB, and it looks pretty boring to zeroth order. It looks just like this. Okay? We can look at the CMB, and it looks exactly like a black body, and it has a temperature of 2.7 Kelvin, whichever direction you look. Now, this is really puzzling because two antipodal points on the CMB, say one that comes from the North Pole and one that comes from the South Pole, have not had time to be in causal contact with each other, even in the age of the universe. Right? And so how could it be that they are in thermal equilibrium then? So this is exactly the question that we want to answer, is why is the CMB so uniform, and how can inflation explain this? All right, so with this in mind, this is the outline of my talk. We'll start by learning a little bit of cosmology. So I'll tell you about expanding universes, the Friedmann equations, and how we can solve for scale factors, how we describe expanding universes. Then I will introduce a concept called the particle horizon, which tells us how far signals can travel in the history of the universe. And we'll calculate the particle horizon for our universe in the usual hot Big Bang picture. Okay. Once we do that, we're going to realize that there's a horizon problem, which is that the CMB is made up of many disconnected patches, okay, so that have not been in causal contact. And then if you paid attention during the first few parts, then you would have been able to guess what the solution is going to be, which is inflation. And I will show you that it's actually very easy to guess the solution. And then very briefly, I will say maybe one slide or two about quantum perturbations and how they generate the seed for structure. And then I'll conclude. All right, so let's start by discussing the expanding universe. So in special relativity, you might remember that the interval between two points separated by dt in time and dx, dy, dz in space is calculated like this. It's minus dt squared plus dx squared plus dy squared plus dz squared. And this is similar to the Pythagoras theorem with a sign that has been flipped. Now, this is the space-time of special relativity, and it's all well and good, but it's actually boring and doesn't actually end up describing cosmology. The reason is because this space-time doesn't expand in time. So if you put two galaxies at some fixed point, they will always be at the same distance at every time. So you put two galaxies initially at one distance, this universe is not going to expand, and the two galaxies will always remain at that same distance. What we want to do in cosmology is describe an expanding universe. And so what we do is we introduce a scale factor, A of t, which is an increasing function of time. Okay? So in this picture now, if we put two galaxies at two fixed coordinates, then at a later time, the physical distance between the galaxies would have increased. So notice now the interpretation of x, y, and z is actually slightly different from the interpretation here. This x, y, and z are just coordinates. And in order to find the physical distance between objects, you have to multiply by the scale factor. So two galaxies at fixed coordinates are not actually at fixed proper distance, because there's a factor of A, which depends on time, multiplying them. All right, so now, so we have introduced A, and the name of the game is determining A. All right, so once we determine A, then we know a lot about our cosmology. Okay, we can calculate how far signals travel, we can calculate the expansion rate of the universe, everything. All right, so how do we find A? We find A by using the Friedmann equation. So the evolution of A is dictated by the contents of the universe. So whatever matter fills the universe, that will tell you how A evolves dynamically. All right? And the dynamical equation to solve is the Friedmann equation, which is just this one. You can derive this from general relativity just by plugging in the metric that we saw on the previous slide. So I won't do that here. And this is a simple differential equation. What it tells you is that the first derivative of A, so A dot squared, divided by A squared, normalized by A squared, is just proportional to the energy density in the universe. Okay, so all we have to do is measure the energy density, and then we can solve for A. This quantity on the left is also called the Hubble rate, and is denoted H. Okay, I won't talk much about the Hubble rate. All I'll be talking about is A dot. But if you've heard Hubble rate in the in popular literature, then this is what they are talking about. It's A dot over A. All right. Notice one thing. I have written the energy density as a function of A. And this is because we're working in an expanding universe. And so the energy density will depend on time. But it's going to be much easier to talk about the energy density as a function of A, not time. And we will see why in the next slide. This is because, you know, certain types of matter that we're very familiar with, they have very nice scaling with A. So let's do an example. Let's consider a box with side length equal to one coordinate unit. Okay, and let's start at time t0, where the scale factor had value a0. So then the physical length of the side is just a0. Okay, and if the energy density at this time was rho0, then the energy density at a different time is just related to rho0 by this very simple quantity. So if at a later time the scale factor is just a, not a0, then all you have to do is multiply by a0 over a cubed to get the energy density here. Okay, this is just because we have three dimensions and, you know, the number density decreases. So this is the story for matter. If you have radiation like photons, it's a little bit more complicated in the sense that not just the number density decreases, but also the photons get stretched, so there is some redshift. Right? So we don't only multiply by a factor of a0 over a cubed, but we multiply by another factor of a0 over a, and this is to take into account the redshift. Okay, so the photons have lower energy here at when the scale factor is bigger. Good, so but we still end up with some very simple expression, which is rho0 times 1 over a to the 4. We had 1 over a to the 3 on the previous slide. So this is mostly the matter that we are familiar with. But in cosmology, there is one more type of, you know, material or substance, or it's an energy density that we're not familiar with in everyday life. And this is dark energy. And dark energy is a bit strange in that if you expand the box, it doesn't actually dilute. So it's the energy density in space just because there is space. There's no other reason why that energy density is there. Just whenever you have space, there is an energy density in it. And this is called dark energy. So if you imagine a box that is filled with dark energy, whatever that means, at some later time, then this box will just have the same energy density. It will not dilute, even if you stretch the box. Good. So these are the three main forms of energy density that we have. And we can summarize the behavior of the three energy densities by writing this. So rho is just rho0 times a0 over a to the power 3, 1 plus w, where w takes on different values depending on the type of energy density we're talking about. So if we're talking about matter, it's 0. If we're talking about radiation, it's a third. If we're talking about dark energy, it's minus 1. And that's it. That's all there is to it. In general, in some universe, we're going to have all these energy densities. For example, in our universe, we have all of them. And to find the total energy density, you just have to add up all of them. So our universe looks more like this. Okay? Good. So let's do a toy example just to get our hands a bit dirty working things out. So we have found an expression for rho of A on the previous slide. And a few slides ago, I showed you the Friedmann equation, which was a differential equation for A, as long as we know rho of A. All right? So here I've copied the Friedmann equation again, but taken a square root. And I have plugged in the expression for rho of A that we found on the previous slide. Now, this is a differential equation for A. and it's separable, it's easy to solve. You can just move all a's to that side and take an integral dt, and so you end up with some equation like this. So I will leave it up to you to do this integral, and then separate, and then move all a's to the left, all t's to the right, and what you end up with is something like this. Okay? So we find out that the scale factor A has some distinct behavior whether the universe contains matter, radiation, or dark energy. And for matter, it goes like t to the 2/3. For radiation, it goes like t to the 1/2. And for dark energy, it goes like e to the ht, where h is a constant. Okay? So this is some behavior. And now, in our universe, we can't actually solve the equation analytically because we have more components. But we can do it numerically. And this is what the answer looks like. So if you try to solve for the scale factor of our universe as a function of time, then you'll get this black curve. And on this plot, I have also overlaid two curves that we saw last time. So this is from the toy examples that we did. The cyan one is a radiation curve, and the magenta one is a matter curve. And we see that our universe in the past looks like it's a radiation universe. At some point, it becomes a matter universe. And then it starts deviating, it's very hard to see, but it starts deviating just today from being a matter universe. Okay? So this is what I said. So in the past, so A will go like t to the 1/2, and then at some later time, it will go like t to the 2/3. And what happens is that there's also an today, the universe begins accelerating, just very close to today. And this is due to this term here, which is rho of dark energy, which does not, it doesn't scale with a scale factor like we saw. So again, I'll emphasize that this is responsible for late time acceleration. This is different from inflation. Okay? So the talk is not about this dark energy. It's about the dark energy that is in the very, very early universe. Good. So now that we can compute A, let's actually find how far signals can travel in the universe. All right? So this concept is the particle horizon. So remember, what we're doing is we're going to compute the particle horizon, and we're going to ask, is the CMB causally connected? So are points on the could points on the CMB have communicated in the past? Okay? And that's why we're heading this way. So we are finding the particle horizon to ask that question. And the particle horizon is the largest distance that a light signal could have traveled in the history of the universe. So ever since the universe began, what's the largest distance that a photon can travel? And this is easy to calculate. It's just an integral over coordinate distance. So we have to find first the coordinate distance that the photon travels. And then we multiply by A of t, which is the scale factor, to get the physical distance. Okay? So the horizon, the particle horizon at some time tf, is just the scale factor at the time tf multiplied by the coordinate distance that the photon would have traveled by time tf. And to get this coordinate distance, we can just add up all the little coordinate distances that the photon travels in a short time dt. So in a short time dt, the photon travels a distance c times delta t in physical space. But in coordinate space, it travels c dt divided by a. And so this is the integral that we have to do and then multiply by a. Okay? Good. So now we can just do some rearranging, which is to say just multiply and divide by dA. And then we get something like this. So we get an a dot in the denominator. And a dot is nice to have here because a dot we can get from the Friedman equation, which we can just express in terms of a. All right. So this whole integral is actually an integral only over a, and you can easily write it from the Friedman equation. Just substitute here for a dot. Good. So just like cleaning up, writing it in a nicer way. So d at some scale factor a is just given by this integral. And now notice the quantity we're integrating is actually 1 over a dot. And what's special about 1 over a dot is that for all normal substances, 1 over a dot is always increasing. Okay? So we're going to see this later. But for normal substances, this quantity is increasing. The integrand is increasing. And so what happens is that this horizon distance gets its most important contributions from late times. If 1 over a dot is always increasing, then you can pretty much ignore the early time tail and just integrate over late times. and that will give you a very good approximation to D, okay, to the particle horizon. Now, this is important because, if this gets all its contributions from late time, we know the late universe very well, and so we can compute exactly what this is in the late universe, right? And there's no wiggle room there. So if this gets its contributions only from late times, then we know exactly what dA is, okay? That we cannot, nobody can change that because we can measure the universe and there's data, and that we cannot argue with. Good. So let's do this integral. So remember, this is the horizon distance, and so the quantity we're integrating is, I'm showing here in a red line. So here on the x-axis, I'm showing A, the value of the scale factor. And on the y-axis, I'm just showing distance in megaparsec. There's also a time axis up here, if you like thinking in terms of time instead of A. But they're the same thing. So the red line here is this A dot inverse. This is the quantity that we are integrating. This is the integrand. And D is just what you get after you integrate and multiply by A at each point. Okay? And again, because A dot inverse is increasing, up until maybe today, where it starts decreasing. So this quantity, D, capital D of A, will get most of its contributions from late times. So we can even not worry about what happens earlier here, and just use the late time cosmology that we know. Okay. So all the range of A that we know here, that I'm showing you here, we have actually measured very well. We have actually measured before this, up to like 10 to the minus 10 or something. Okay. And there's no wiggle room here. So everything that you do here will have to be confronted by data, which will have to be, it will have to fit data. There's one more line, one vertical line that I'm showing here, which is the surface of last scattering. So last scattering happens at a time where the universe was about 380,000 years old, like we saw, on the second or third slide. And this corresponds to a scale factor of about 10 to the minus 3. Okay. So the last scattering happens is an event. It happens here. And from this plot, we can actually read what the horizon was at last scattering. Okay, so we can just know this value. And this value ends up being 0.3 megaparsec. Okay, so pictorially, this is what we have. We have a surface of last scattering. And the horizon size at the time of last scattering is 0.3 megaparsec. Now, our distance to the last scattering surface, you can also do by performing an integral similar to the one that I showed you, but we won't do that here. And the distance is 13 megaparsec. So you can compute the angle that one horizon, that's subtended by one horizon on the last scattering surface. Okay, so the angle is easy to compute. It's 0.3 divided by 13 in radians, and it ends up being 0.02. And now if you want to find the number of causally disconnected patches in the C and B, all you have to do is divide the full solid angle by this number squared, and you get about 24,000 causally disconnected patches. Okay? So the C and B is actually, even though it looks uniform, it's made up of 24,000 little causally disconnected patches. They would have been causally disconnected patches in the hot Big Bang model. So this is the hot Big Bang model. Okay? This is a very, very big puzzle as to why 20,000 causally disconnected patches seem like they are in thermal equilibrium. Now, let me tell you a bit more about this using a football analogy. So let's say I go to London to the dance stadium to watch a football match. Okay? And if I go there, and then if I find Andy and Francesco, then I would be a little bit surprised, I will ask them, why did you guys not invite me to come see this match with you? And they'll be like, no, it's a coincidence. We actually did not plan this. We just happened to be here at the same time. And they're my really good friends, so I'm inclined to believe them. And so that's fine. And we'll just sit there, watch the match, and enjoy it. But if Shivaji had a little bit more funds, then the situation could have been slightly different, which is to say I could have went to the stadium. And the state of the stadium could have been something like this, where we have 20,000 Leverhulme Piles fellows, and they all fill all the seats. All right? And then I would ask my very good friends, I'd be like, why did you not invite me to this game? you know, to watch this match. And then, you know, no matter how much they promise that this was not planned, it was a coincidence, et cetera, et cetera, I'd be like, no, I don't believe you. How come, you know, you all happen to be at the same time, at the same place? This was definitely planned. There's, you know, a group chat or something on which I'm not. And so, you know, so I just won't believe them. I will be like, no matter how much you promise, I just won't believe you guys. And this is the same story with the CMB, okay? So the CMB has 20,000, you know, causally disconnected patches in the hot Big Bang picture, and yet they all choose to go to the same temperature. And how come? That's not something believable, okay? Good. So to reiterate, the CMB should have different temperatures in each of these circles, but it doesn't. And we should really be suspicious that the hot Big Bang model is underestimating the true size of the horizon. The horizon cannot be this small, because otherwise, how would the CMB have had the same temperature? So there has to have been communication between all these. Just like I suspect my friends are communicating behind my back, these patches should also be communicating with each other. All right. So what we do is we need to find a way to make sure that there are no causally disconnected patches in the CMB. In other words, we need to make the horizon a lot bigger. Okay. But for those paying attention, this is really hard, because the horizon and the hot Big Bang picture. This is really hard because the horizon and the hot Big Bang picture receives its contribution from the late universe. And the late universe we have measured very well. So you cannot change that. There's nothing to do. Right? And the reason it receives this contribution from the late universe is because A dot inverse is an increasing function of time. And so if you do this integral, it will be dominated by late times. And then you can ignore early times. All right? The catch, though, is that, you know, A dot inverse is an increasing function of time in the usual hot Big Bang picture, but we can change that picture. We can change that picture at early times, where we have no data yet. We have some indirect probes, but if we are able to change the picture at early times so that A dot inverse is actually decreasing, so that dA receives a large contribution from very early times, then we might be able to increase the size of the horizon. Okay? So this slide is what I just said in words. So the, All right, like I was telling you, so this is about 1 second after the Big Bang. We know pretty much everything up to about 1 second after the Big Bang. After that, so data here is very constraining. But before here, we only have some indirect probes, of which I will show you one. One of them is the perturbations in the CMB. Okay, and I will talk more about that later. But these are all indirect probes. We don't actually see things here directly. Okay? Good. All right, so because data here is not as constraining, we can play with the function A of t initially. So what we want is we want A dot inverse to decrease, which means 1 over A dot decreases, which means A dot increases, which means the universe has to be accelerating. So that's why inflation is an accelerating period, because A dot has to be an increasing function of time. Okay? So A double dot is positive, in other words. Like, the acceleration is positive. So what we do is that we can just change what A looks like, you know, at early times by, either by hand or by postulating some different energy density, like dark energy at early times. But that's, again, independent of this here. So the scale factor in the usual hot Big Bang model is this black line. And here I've just tacked on, a little patch of inflation right in the very, very early universe at around 10 to the minus 36 seconds. Okay? So all it takes is for the universe to inflate from 10 to the minus 36 seconds to 10 to the minus 34 seconds. So this really fast acceleration, yeah? And then you can see that, the expansion here is really, really fast. It's accelerating. If you compute the derivative, like A double dot here, it'll be positive. And the scale factor increases by a factor of e to the 100. Okay? So this is one very particular model that we have picked. You can change, you can play with these parameters. You can, you know, move this period here. You can move it here. You can decrease this, the e to the 100 factor. And all these things are free parameters. There are some constraints on them, but not that many. Good. And so With this period of inflation, what does the horizon look like then? Okay, so we can compute the same plot again. So this is A dot inverse of the usual hot Big Bang, and this is the horizon of the usual hot Big Bang. A dot inverse in inflation is going to decrease, so this is what A dot inverse in inflation looks like, this red line, and then it catches on with this one and carries on, doesn't do anything after, that's different. But now if you compute the integral, you will get this green curve, because most of the contribution will come from early times, not from late times. Right, so the area under this curve is dominated now by early times, not by late times. Okay? So intuitively, what's happening is that inflation is an expansion that is very, very fast. And so what's happening is that two points that are very far away now, if you try to extrapolate in the past in the hot Big Bang picture, they would not get that close because the expansion is not that fast. So if you try to extrapolate back, these two points will still be far away in the hot Big Bang picture. But if you have a period of expansion that's really exponentially, that's accelerating and just like inflation, then these two points, even though they're far away now, they could have been really close in the past. And if they are really close in the past, then they could have talked in the past. Okay? So in the hot Big Bang model, they cannot because the expansion rate is not not accelerating. So what we see here, the important part is that it has to be accelerating, right? So it has to be A dot inverse has to be decreasing, which means A double dot is positive. Okay, and in particular, there's one thing to point out here, that this here is the surface of last scattering. So this here is the line where we have no data beforehand. This here is the surface of last scattering. And remember, the horizon was here, was the intersection of the blue line with the green line, and it was about 0.3 megaparsec. Okay. Now the horizon is e to the 100 bigger than that, because we have this factor of e to the 100 in expansion. So the horizon here is going to be e to the 100 times bigger than that, and that's big enough to actually include all of the whole surface of last scattering. And so there's no disconnected patches on the surface of last scattering if we have something like inflation. Okay, so adding a period of accelerated expansion, So adding a period of accelerated expansion, which is inflation in the early universe, we see that the horizon can be much bigger than what the hot Big Bang predicts, and that's because it gets most of its contributions from the early times. Okay, so yeah, equivalently, points could have been much closer than what the hot Big Bang predicts. Okay. But that's actually not the only thing that inflation can do. One other thing that inflation can do, which is that it can explain these perturbations. Okay, so it can explain the pattern of perturbations that we see on the cosmic microwave background. So the picture that I showed you before is actually a zeroth order picture of the CMB, and its temperature is 2.7 Kelvin. But what happens is that there are actually very tiny fluctuations that are at the level of 1 part in 10 to the 5. So these little tiny mountains and valleys are 10 to the minus 5 times 2.7. Oops. Right. And we wouldn't know, for example, where these were. We wouldn't have a very good explanation of why we see these. So these have been detected, recently, as in 10, 12 years ago. So we wouldn't exactly know how to explain this pattern. But inflation actually produces a way of giving this pattern. And in order to see that, let's review first the physics of the quantum simple harmonic oscillator. So everything in physics is a simple harmonic oscillator, and this is actually, even the CMB pattern is a simple harmonic oscillator, which is crazy. All right, so let's look at the quantum simple harmonic oscillator. There's a potential. And this is the potential as a function of position. It's the blue line. And what we imagine a particle that sits in this potential. And we ask, what is the wave function of that particle? OK, we can solve the Schrodinger equation. And then we find the wave function of that particle. And if you remember, the wave function of the particle in the ground state is a Gaussian. OK, so which means that the position of the particle x if you try to measure it at some random time, will be drawn from a probability distribution that is the square of the wave function, which is this Gaussian. Okay? So if you measure the position of the particle, even though the particle is in its ground state, you will not get zero. This is one manifestation of the uncertainty principle, where the particle cannot exactly be localized at x equals 0. So if you measure the position, you won't get 0. You will get some number with a spread, depending on when the measurement is done, etc. So it's just a quantum mechanical process. So while the expectation value of the variable x, which denotes the position of the particle, is 0, its variance is not. So different measurements will give different values of x. And typically, if you do a measurement, you won't get 0. So the set 0 here, getting 0 because the point is measure 0, and so you probably won't get 0 if you do a number of random measurements. All right, so typical values of the position are actually not 0, even though the expectation value is 0. Now, in inflation, something similar happens. Okay? In the simplest models of inflation, we need some energy density that will drive this accelerated expansion. Okay? And this energy density is provided by some scalar field, usually. So there's a scalar field which has a potential, so it has an energy. And the energy density to drive accelerated expansion is provided just by this scalar field. During inflation, this scalar field will have some background value, some average value, which I'm calling phi bar, that depends only on time. Okay, so it can only change as a function of time, but not in space. But in addition to this, there could be a perturbation that depends on both space and time. Okay, so this perturbation is usually normalized with this factor of A. The factor of A is not so important for the story. The important part is the delta phi, which depends on both space and time. So just like the original picture that I showed you of the expanding universe, space during inflation is actually flat. So what we can do, so the spatial slices are actually flat. So what we can do is we can expand this delta phi in Fourier modes. So we can take a Fourier transform on the variable x, and we'll get delta phi of t and k. So we won't Fourier transform the t variable, only the x variable. And now we can talk about each Fourier mode, delta phi k, separately. And that is only a function of time. All right? Much like the position of the simple harmonic oscillator, x is a function of time, delta phi sub k is only a function of time. But the analogy goes even deeper. It obeys the same equation of motion. Okay, it obeys an equation of motion that is an equation of motion of the simple harmonic oscillator. So each k mode obeys an equation of motion that is very similar to the simple harmonic oscillator. The difference is that this depends on time, but that's a technicality. So the equation is very similar. Good. And so when we consider the system quantum mechanically, then the physics of the system will be the same as the physics of the simple harmonic oscillator in quantum mechanics. Okay, so the expectation value of delta phi sub k will be 0, but its variance would not be 0. Okay, and its variance would not be 0. And so if you measure delta phi sub k at some random time, you're more, you typically will get some non-zero value. Okay, and so I remind you, so what does this mean? This means that, remember that delta phi k is the amplitude of the kth wave mode. Okay, so this means that different k wave modes have an amplitude that is drawn from a random distribution, and that random distribution is a Gaussian, just like the simple harmonic oscillator. Okay, so just like the simple harmonic oscillator, so these k modes, delta phi k, are typically non-zero, and they would be drawn from a random distribution, and these tell you about the amplitudes of the kth mode. So the picture we have is then this. For each k mode, we have a, so this is a k mode, so there's a k vector that that runs orthogonal to these waves. So for each k mode, we have a wave, it's delta phi sub k, and its amplitude, we have a wave for each k mode, so it'll be e to the ikx, and its amplitude is delta phi sub k. And what we have to do is draw from a random distribution all these amplitudes. And for each k-mode, so we have to sum up with each k-mode. We draw a random amplitude and we sum up, like all the k-modes, to get exactly what delta phi looks like in the end. All right? So what I'm showing here are the, this is the x, this is x, y spatial directions. I haven't drawn z because then we wouldn't see the wave. But basically, just summing up, summing up all these fluctuations will give us some picture that looks like this. Yeah, so this is called a Gaussian random field. And this picture is exactly this. Okay? Even the color scheme matches. So the statistics of the fluctuations that you get just by summing up all these delta phi sub k exactly match the statistics of the fluctuations that we get from the CMB. Okay? So inflation doesn't just produce a homogeneous CMB, but it can also produce the 1 part in 10 to the 5 fluctuations that we see. And this actually is the only probe of the early universe that we have. So this can probe things as early as 10 to the minus 36 seconds, like I showed you. Depending on when inflation happened, this will probe things really, really early. But this is the only probe of the early universe that we have at the moment. And so studying these fluctuations, we might be able to uncover more details about inflation or, like when it happened, how it happened, which fields are responsible, etc. Okay, so I have 2 more minutes, so let me conclude. So we discussed a puzzle called the horizon problem that stems from observing a uniform CMB despite predictions of the standard hot Big Bang model. So the predictions of the hot Big Bang model say that the CMB should be made up of 20,000 causally disconnected patches, and yet it looks uniform when we look at it. Okay, so something must give. The observation is right, and so we must alter our model. We saw that inflation can actually remedy this issue by allowing these patches to come into causal contact in the early universe. Okay, so the horizon at the time of inflation is calculated slightly differently and gets very, very big and important contributions from the early universe, which are absent in the standard hot Big Bang model. And then as a bonus, if you study inflation in the context of quantum mechanics, you get the perturbations that we see in the CMB, the 10 to the minus 5 level perturbations that we see in the CMB. So all this is well and good, and despite all the success of this theory, really pinning down the microscopic realization of inflation is still a very important open problem. We don't exactly know, which fields are responsible, whether it's one or multiple fields. Yeah, there are various possibilities there. And so it's this problem is important in both theory and observations. Good. So that's all I have to say. Thank you so much for your attention.